In this section, we're going to cover the general purpose financial statements, starting with the balance sheet. The balance sheet reports economic resources and obligations as of a specific date. The main premise of the balance sheet is the accounting equation, which is assets equals liabilities plus shareholders' equity. The order of items, starting at the top, would be current assets, then long-term assets, then short-term liabilities, then long-term liabilities, and then shareholders' equity. Assets are presented in order of liquidity, with cash being at the top. Current assets are assets that are expected to be used up within a year. Examples of current assets are cash, inventory, prepaid expenses, accounts receivable, short-term investments. Examples of long-term assets would be property, plant, and equipment, investments, goodwill, patents, other intangible assets that are amortized over more than a year. Current liabilities are liabilities expected to be resolved within 1 year. They are presented in order of maturity, usually starting with accounts payable. Examples of short-term liabilities would be accounts payable, short-term debt, bonds or dividends payable within the next year, income tax payable, accrued expenses, deferred revenue. Examples of long-term liabilities would be notes payable, capital lease obligations, or bonds payable, the non-current portion. In comparison to the income statement, which shows activity over a period of time, such as January 1st to December 31st, again, the balance sheet is just showing what a company has as of a certain date, which would usually be the end of the corresponding period to the income statement, so December 31st. A couple things you could see a question on related to the balance sheet. Common ratios that are used to analyze a balance sheet would be the current ratio. This is used to evaluate current assets compared to current liabilities. Or in other words, does the company have enough short-term resources to cover their short-term liabilities? You want to see a ratio of at least one to show that the company has enough current assets to cover current liabilities. So the current ratio is simply current assets over current liabilities. A more telling version of the current ratio would be the quick ratio or the acid test. And that is just current assets minus inventory and prepaids over current liabilities. Then the debt to equity ratio. This is a ratio of what is owed to what is owned by the company. Debt to equity equals total liabilities over shareholders' equity. Goods that are out on consignment should be included in the company's inventory at their cost. So that is the definition of consignment, really. It's just the company still owns the inventory. It's out for sale by a third party, but the company still owns that inventory. So goods out on consignment are included in a company's inventory. Money collected in advance for a product will go into the liabilities section as deferred revenue. The transaction has created a liability to provide goods or services in the future to the customer who has now paid in advance. So it's deferred revenue, it's a liability. Gift cards and gift certificates, these are deferred revenue until they are either used and they become revenue, or if they expire and they become revenue when they expire. Moving on to the income statement. On the income statement, revenues and expenses are from direct business activities. Gains or losses result from non-business activities, such as a manufacturing company selling old equipment. That's not their primary business. Manufacturing goods is their primary business, so the manufacturing of goods generates revenues and expenses. But if they sell some old equipment, that would result in a gain or loss. The income statement is organized to show a company's activities for the year, with the end result showing net income. Here's a breakdown of how a multiple-step income statement is organized. You would start with sales, you would subtract cost of goods sold, that would get you to gross income. From there, you subtract selling, general, and admin expenses. Then you subtract depreciation, this would get you to operating income. Then you add or subtract any miscellaneous revenue or gains or expenses or losses, meaning interest income or interest expense, and that gets you to income before tax. Then you subtract the actual income tax expense. That leaves you with income from continuing operations. Then you would add or subtract any income or loss from discontinued operations, and that finally gets you to net income. In comparison to a multiple-step income statement, there is a single-step income statement, and a single-step income statement is very simplified. It just lumps revenues and gains together, and then expenses and losses together, and netting the two, which leaves net income. or a net loss. The multiple-step income statement breaks things out so that investors or users can see gross profit, operating income, and then non-operating revenues, gains, or losses separate from operating income, which altogether is income from continuing operations. The last item is income from discontinued operations, if there are any, and then finally, net income. A few things you could see a question on relating to income statements. Amortization of a discount on a note payable is an interest expense. It is a contra liability on the balance sheet, and as it's amortized, it's recognized on the income statement as interest expense. You should know how to do problems where you're given amounts from different accounts that flow into each other to determine an ending amount being asked in the question. An example would be if ABC had the following transactions in year one. They had disbursements for inventory purchases of $300,000. Their accounts payable increased $20,000. And their inventory account decreased $30,000. And then the question would ask something like, what was their cost of goods sold for the year? So to determine that, you know the beginning inventory plus purchases minus ending inventory equals cost of goods sold. So purchases are $300,000 and accounts payable increased $20,000 for the year. That means that purchases exceeded cash payments by $20,000. So you would add $20,000. Inventory decreased $30,000. That would mean more inventory was sold than was purchased. So this would also be added for a cost of goods sold of $350,000. So that's what I mean by a problem where different accounts that flow into each other, they give you a few pieces of information as to what happened, such as saying accounts payable increased this amount, inventory decreased, and their disbursements for purchases was this amount, and they want you to arrive at the correct amount for the ending account, whatever that may be, or they can ask that in the opposite order. But you should just know how those accounts flow together, and you do that by knowing the formula for inventory, such as purchases, how that relates to cost of goods sold. Another thing is you could be given the basic facts about a transaction, and then you'd be asked where it would be reported on the income statement. For example, ABC purchased new sales software to run its stores. ABC expects to use the software for 10 years. How would this be reported on a multiple-step income statement? This really is just a depreciation question. ABC would include 1/10 of the cost in the SG&A section of the income statement because it's simply the depreciation amount for 1 year. It wouldn't be in cost of goods sold, nor would the full amount of the purchase be included all in the first year. So that's an example of a somewhat vague question where they're just testing your knowledge of, okay, here's kind of a vague statement. What does this really mean in accounting language and where would this show up on the income statement? A few common ratios used to analyze income statements would be gross margin. That's simply gross profit over net sales. This measures the percentage of sales available for expenses and profit after subtracting cost of goods sold. Then there's profit margin, which is net income over net sales. This measures the percentage of sales that become profit. Then there's earnings per share. It's net income, a simplified version, net income over the weighted average number of common shares outstanding. This measures net income on a per share basis. Next, there is the statement of comprehensive income. The idea behind comprehensive income is to show a total picture of all operating income, gains, and losses. So comprehensive income is equal to net income plus other comprehensive income. That gives you comprehensive income. Other comprehensive income items are unrealized gains or losses on AFS securities or available for sale securities, unrecognized gains or losses from pension costs, foreign currency translation adjustments, unrealized gains or losses from certain derivative transactions. Comprehensive income can be presented in two ways. It can be in combination with the income statement, so other comprehensive income would be added just below net income, or it can be shown as a separate statement. You'd have the income statement and a separate statement of comprehensive income. The separate statement starts with net income and then reports other comprehensive income to arrive at comprehensive income. Another term to know is a reclassification adjustment. Accumulated other comprehensive income, or AOCI, is reported in the shareholders' equity section of the balance sheet. The OCI items are accumulated there until the gain is realized, meaning an AFS security is actually sold. And then the gain is reclassified through net income and the AOCI is reduced by that amount. Otherwise, those gains would be counted twice. These reclassification adjustments are reported in the notes to the financial statements. That's what a reclassification adjustment is. Next would be the statement of changes in equity. This statement shows changes during the year for the following items: common stock, preferred stock, additional paid in capital, retained earnings, treasury stock, and AOCI. It can be part of the footnotes or as a separate statement. Public companies show 3 years of comparative owner's equity on their statement of changes in equity. The next is the statement of cash flows. So the statement of cash flows is to show the changes in cash during the period. Users want to know about a company's ability to generate and control cash in order to assess the company's ability to meet its obligations. There are three types of cash flows, or three categories of cash flows, on a cash flow statement. They are operating, investing, and financing. Operating are changes in cash resulting from regular business operations. This would be cash received from customers, dividend income, interest income or expense, but only those amounts received in cash for the year, or cash paid for business expenses. In the investing section, these are changes in cash resulting from investing activities. These would be the purchase or the sale of investments or long-term assets, or making a loan to a borrower. Getting a loan would be in the financing section. So in the financing section, this tracks changes in cash resulting from financing activities such as issuing and selling company stock, purchasing treasury stock, receiving a loan, also making payments on a loan, paying dividends, or issuing bonds. The most common mistakes with the statement of cash flows: dividends received are part of net income, therefore they are an operating activity, whereas dividends paid are a financing activity. Interest expense, or interest paid, is an operating activity, as is interest income. You should also read questions carefully to identify non-cash transactions, which would mean they aren't classified on the statement of cash flows if no cash is involved. An example would be converting debt into stock. These would be reported in the notes to the financial statements or in a separate schedule. Then with the statement of cash flows, you have the difference in the direct method versus the indirect method. The real difference in the two methods, it deals with the operating activities section. In the direct method, each line is a direct statement showing cash paid or cash received, such as cash paid to customers or cash paid to suppliers. On an indirect statement, operating activity starts with net income and works backwards to arrive at cash provided or cash used by operating activities. And several non-cash items, such as depreciation expense or a gain or loss on the sale of equipment, would appear in that section. When using the indirect method, you are taking net income on the accrual basis, obviously, and you're converting it to the cash basis. Here are a few common items and how they relate when doing so. A change in assets means cash moved in the opposite direction, and a change in liabilities means that cash moved in the same direction. A few examples: an increase in inventory means less inventory was sold than purchased. So this would be a subtraction from net income. A decrease in inventory means more inventory was sold than purchased. So this would be an addition to net income. An increase in a payable means that more was accrued than paid. So this is added to net income. An increase in a receivable means more was accrued than received. So this is subtracted from net income. And depreciation expense is non-cash, but it reduces net income on the accrual basis, so it is added to net income when doing the indirect method. A few things on the notes to financial statements that you should know. Disclosures are a key part of the financial statements in that they provide information about assumptions and estimates. The big section with the notes is management's discussion and analysis, or the MD&A. This is a required part for publicly held companies, and it discusses operations, liquidity, capital resources, major accounting policies, and with that, the significant accounting policies. There needs to be a disclosure on significant accounting policies and how they are applied. Some of the items that should be included, if applicable, would be how a company recognizes revenue or their revenue recognition policies, how a company determines what investments are cash equivalents, how a company prices their inventory, and methods for amortizing intangibles. Now, that list could be a lot longer. Those are just some of the main ones, or the most common. Other disclosures: during During times of price instability, a disclosure is required discussing the effects of the instability on the company's business. Also, related party transactions, any significant related party information would be discussed in the notes. Any concentrations of credit risk, if a business and most of its customers or suppliers all operate within the same industry, then a concentration of credit risk needs to be disclosed in the notes. Another one would be contingent liabilities. Remember that possible liabilities that are not both probable and can be reasonably estimated. If it was both, then it would be on the balance sheet. So one of those two things, but not both, those would be disclosed in the notes instead of being accrued on the balance sheet. Next is consolidated financial statements. Consolidated financials present the assets, liabilities, equity, income, expenses, and cash flows of a parent company and its subsidiaries as one economic entity. A few definitions you should know: the controlling interest. So one entity has control of another if it owns more than 50% of that entity. A parent company must consolidate any subsidiaries under its control. Then you would have a non-controlling interest. This would be an ownership stake less than 50% of an entity. Another definition is a variable interest entity, or a VIE. This is an entity that is controlled by another entity, but not through voting rights. So a VIE has a primary beneficiary, and when the beneficiary is a company, the company will consolidate the VIE's holdings onto its balance sheet and produce consolidated financial statements. A VIE is usually set up by the controlling entity to perform a specific business purpose. So the primary beneficiary, and in this instance, we're talking about the primary beneficiary of a VIE, the test for being the controlling interest in a VIE, all three of the following needs to be true: the direct or indirect ability to make decisions about the entity's activities through voting rights or similar rights, the obligation to absorb losses of the entity if they occur, the right to receive returns from the entity if they occur, which is compensation for taking the risk to absorb the entity's losses. At the date of consolidation, the assets and liabilities of the parent and sub are combined on the balance sheet, but the income statement and statement of cash flows will only show from the parent because their operations weren't combined until that date. One of the big things you can see questions on, or will see a question on, most likely will be calculating goodwill in a consolidation. So goodwill in a consolidation is the difference between the cost of the acquired business and the fair value of the net assets. A lot of these types of problems will point out that one or more of the assets being acquired is listed on the books for less than its fair value. So you need to know that you would take the book value of the assets, add any fair value missing from the book value to get to the total fair value. This is then subtracted from the cost of the acquisition, which would give you the goodwill amount, whatever is left over. For example, let's say that ABC purchased all of the stock of XYZ for $500,000. XYZ's net assets had a book value of $300,000, but they had a piece of land on the books that had a fair value of $50,000 more than its book value. So in this case, ABC would show goodwill of $150,000 after the acquisition. So you have the $500,000 acquisition price. When you include the missing fair value of $50,000, so again, that piece of land is actually worth $50,000 more than it's listed out on the books. So you would add that to the value of the assets of XYZ, the company being acquired. That would get you to $350,000. So it's $500,000 minus $350,000. That leaves you with goodwill of $150,000. Any issuance costs or legal fees involved in a consolidation, there's specific treatment for those. So the costs to register and issue stock in order to acquire another company, those are netted against the paid-in capital account upon consolidation, whereas legal or consulting fees due to the consolidation are just expensed as incurred. All intercompany transactions must be removed on consolidated statements, or else the level of activity would be, of course, overstated for both entities. A downstream transaction is when the parent sells to the sub, and an upstream transaction is when the sub sells to the parent. The following types of transactions would be eliminated in consolidated statements: any intercompany receivables or payables, any intercompany revenues or expenses, any intercompany inventory, intercompany fixed assets, or any intercompany bonds. Few things to know with discontinued operations, again, if it applies, they appear below continuing operations on the income statement. The important thing to know about discontinued operations is that they are presented net of tax. Also, the results of operations are presented on one line, and then the gain or loss on the disposal of the business segment is reported on a separate line.